Excuse me, this is the conference coordinator. I would like to remind you this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. If you need assistance during the call, please press star zero. You may begin.
Thank you. I just heard an awful lot of noise when the operator was speaking. Is it happening when I'm doing, when I'm talking to?
Yes, I'm getting them to look into the balance. Sorry.
Thank you very much.
Would you like a quick roll call?
Yes, please.
Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's call on Tuesday the 22nd of September, we have Alan Greenberg, Michaeli Nalon, Mikey O'Connor, Barry Cobb, James Bladell, Jeffrey Eckhouse, Siva Mutasami, Paul Diaz, Michael Palage, Sergei Gorbunov, Phil Langdonor, Ron Wickersham, William McKellicott, Mason Cole. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Glenda Saint-Géry, Margie Milam, and Michael Young has just joined the call as well. Apologies, we have Ted Suzuki. And if I can please remind everyone to state their names before speaking, this is for transcript and for recording purposes. Thank you.
Thank you, Gisela. Are there any comments on the agenda before we start? No hands, no comments. All right. I was asked to note that as of a few minutes from now, we have all statements of interest for participants in this meeting. So we are okay to go on that. The practice has been that if people don't submit statements of interest, that they be removed from the mailing list. But that does not look like we have to worry about the that process at the moment. The first item on the agenda is to finalize the registrar survey. We've spent an inordinate number of weeks on this. I believe the version that Marika sent out pretty well maps to what we agreed to last week. Has everyone had a chance to briefly look at it? And short, instead of going through it item by item again, I will ask if there's any items that you believe are incorrect or must be addressed right now. I'll point out that we will have the ability of changing this as we go along, but we need to have closure on an initial set of questions so that staff can start working at collecting the answers.
Alan, Ron has his hand up in the...
Yes, I see that. Thank you.
Okay.
Ron?
Yes. Yes, this is Ron Wickersham speaking. Yes, this is the first time I've been associated with a working group. So if anyone, if I've done the statement of interest incomplete or wrong, if somebody would give me some feedback on that, I can change it. And then secondly, I agree with what the work has been done and the current state of the questions. So my support for it pretty much as it's there.
Okay. Any other comments, positive or negative, from anyone? In the absence of some, I will assume that we can allow staff to start the actual work on collecting some information. Cheryl.
This is Marika.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's a question. That's a tick mark, okay?
I didn't have time to raise my hand yet. Because I probably will be reaching out to some of you in this working group, of course, those that are a part of registrars that will be targeting for the survey, because hopefully you'll be able to help me to either locate the information or at least identify a person that I might be able to speak to provide some of the information that we're looking for. So I hope you'll be able to be of assistance in that effort.
Marika, you may also want to talk to some of the people on this call or not as part of the registrar constituency to identify other registrars who may not be participating in this call but might be good candidates to talk to.
Yes, and I'll definitely talk as well to some of our registrar liaisons who, you know, will have more regular contact with some of the registrars that we'll be looking at. So hopefully we'll be able to identify those people that will be able to help finding the answers if it's not publicly available yet.
Okay, thank you.
Got a hand up, Alan.
Yes, sir, Jeff.
Okay, that was actually my question. Marika answered part of it. What is, I guess, the timelines and expectations, I guess, that this group has on the survey? And just so, you know, because it wouldn't be a bad idea. I mean, we can start giving some advance notice to the constituency to explain it and, you know, maybe set up some time with Marika. I'm just curious, what's the... I don't know, Alan, if you've set this up in advance. What do you see as the timeline for this, for, you know, sending it out, responses, that sort of, if that's even thought out yet, I'm not sure.
We did have a conversation on that a few weeks ago, and I'm going to misquote the actual numbers we used, but I'm sure Marika or somebody will correct me. But we did say if we limit the number of initial registrars surveyed to something in the order of certainly not more than 20 and perhaps 10, then we are talking a few weeks to do this work, not months. So we are talking about well before Seoul, and hopefully by the middle of October or so. That's my recollection, but it may be wishful thinking, and that's not what we said. Marika, do you have any better memory than I do?
Yeah, I think that's what we discussed to start off with top 10 registrars. And I do have to say that when we initially started the survey, I think the questions were, you know, the information was more easily probably traceable on websites. But now some of the questions, you know, I think in several of them, I definitely know, you know, that information is not available. So I think we'll take a little bit more time because I will be required to reach out to several of the registrars to try to find or identify that information. So it's difficult at this point how quickly it will go. I guess it depends a bit as well on the feedback and you know, how much time people have to provide the information and fill out the survey.
I guess I would make an editorial comment that if information is difficult to find on the website and the registrar contacts don't know the answer, that alone gives us information, and I wouldn't want to hold up all of the results because some of the things are in that category. We may well be asking questions which no one knows the answers to, and that's enlightening in its own right. Mason?
Yeah, just a question. Marika, I saw on the wiki the link to the current version of the survey. I assume you'll put a clean version up there when it's finally finalized.
Yes.
Okay.
There are no further comments following this call. I don't know if people need. You know, we only put it up, I think, today. So, what would be reasonable for people to read through it and sign off on it until Friday? Would that be reasonable?
This coming Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, assuming we get through it today. I mean, my point of view is that should be enough time. Yeah.
Well, at this point, if no one has specific comments, we are through with it. The intent was not to go through it again, like, item by item.
The only question that I would have, because there's still this possible sub-question under question two, I don't know if that's something that you want to discuss on the mailing list or for people to comment, because now it still is a possible sub-question. So the question is, do we leave that in or does that go out?
Well, my preference is to leave it in because we are not asking for information. We're asking how does a registrar view a cancellation. And it is really, we follow the answer is we follow the same procedure as if it had been expired, or we do something different. And we're not asking what it is they do different. So I don't see a lot of harm in asking that question, but perhaps other people see it differently.
It's Jeff here. I think the question's fine. I think you're basically saying, hey, if a customer asks you to do something specific, do you follow their instructions? Or, you know, to delete it immediately or not? I mean, that question's fine. I don't mind that question at all.
Okay. Any other thoughts?
Yes, Ms. Marika. So what I'll do, I'll clean up this version and post it again to the mailing list probably tomorrow morning, and then everyone can send in their common suggestions, preferably on the mailing list so everyone can see what changes or edits you're proposing with the aim of having a final version by close of business on Friday so we can get started on this on Monday. Would that be acceptable for everyone?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. Alan, it's Jeff. I just I don't know.
Yes, sorry.
I'm flipping
between screens and I hadn't seen you. Go ahead.
No, I'm not sure. I just had one point. I don't know. You know, I've reread these a few times, and there was just one question that I think would really help with some clarification if we change this. I know we've gone through this, but it's the one where it says the question. I think the bullet points are kind of screwing me up, but it says, based upon the changes made by the registrar upon expiration, what happens if email is sent by a third party to the email address that uses the expired domain name?
Because
I've been on these calls and I fully understand this. I know we've discussed the term third party, but maybe if we say, I don't know if you want to say something, because I know what we're trying to say is like, hey, if I get an email from Merrill Lynch and it goes to that, that's the question we're asking, right? That goes to that address.
Yeah,
like
outside
of the registrar reseller grouping.
That's correct.
Right. So, you know, I don't know if there's a way to clarify that, because I know we've talked about at length this. I just want to make it clear so that when we send it to the other registrars that haven't been involved in this call, or maybe, you know, to somebody else, say, you know, I might be not be the person answering every single one individually. It might be some of my staff. If there's any way to just give it an example or clarify that, that was the only one I thought that was somewhat confusing.
Okay.
So I don't know. Maybe I'm the only person. I'm not sure. But that was just my one little input for today.
Yeah. The term third party was added at our last meeting. I think Tim suggested it, but it may have been somebody else, to try to clarify it. So obviously it was not the ultimate clarification. If someone can suggest some wording or an example that will make it clear, I have no problem putting it in. I'll try to think of one also. Clearly, we're talking about if someone other than the registrar, reseller, and registrant sends email to an address which has the domain name in question after the at sign, what happens? Now, can we state that in clear language? I'm not sure it can be clearer than that, but that is the intent of the question, and we will try our best to. Someone will try. Will try their best to try to make it clear.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Anything else? Going. Gone. Done.
Woohoo!
Right. That's been a long time. This is Mikey.
See, if we get rid of this consensus business and simply go for kings or queens, these things would be an awful lot quicker.
Now, Alan, you and I have got phone chatting, Saul.
Okay, the next question, and unfortunately this is not one for which we have a structured way of attacking, is what do we plan for the workshop in Seoul? As I had mentioned earlier, some of us going into this process hoped that we would have hammered out a tentative agreement well before Seoul, and we could report on it there. That could still happen, but it's not at all a certainty at this point. Seoul is approximately 1 month away. How many more meetings do we have? Has anyone counted them? One, two, three... maybe four meetings, depending on when you get on your airplanes. Any suggestions on how we attack this? There's Marika, who has her hand up.
Yes, I first wanted to, because I think that was on my to-do list from the last meeting, just to confirm, for now, the workshop or meeting or whatever it's going to be is scheduled for Monday the 26th of October from 2 o'clock to 3:30. I know we're still in the process of finalizing the schedule or having a first draft out, but this is where it is for now, and I expect it to stay there, but no, it's not set in stone yet.
So that means we need to come into the meeting knowing what we're doing, because we don't have the luxury of a week in Seoul to do it before.
Yes, and another reason why this is on the agenda now is that, of course, we've all been asked to provide information that is going to be posted on the website as what this meeting is about, so the community can inform themselves as well and decide which meeting they would like to attend or not. So we've been all requested to provide that information as soon as possible. So
That's the deadline of the end of the month, if I remember correctly.
I think so.
Yeah. Ron? Yeah. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, just a question. Is the, I mean, I presume that we're not expected to buy a ticket and show up there, right? But is this a, also a telephone meeting at Seoul, or?
There will be both facilities available for those that are that want to participate, either by phone line or Adobe Connect.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Okay, so Marika, so you're saying for the this particular workshop that has been requested?
Yes, it has.
Okay, thank you, Mason.
I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, but I just wanted to ask what is the hoped for outcome for the. For the Seoul session, I mean, are we just looking for additional community feedback, or is it to report what we've done so far, or how's the meeting going to be oriented?
Well, I think that's what we're talking about right now, so your input is welcome. I think it's going to be a combination of the two of them in terms of reporting back. What we will have by then, I'm not sure. We clearly have the comments on the public, or the summary of the public comments that we've now received and need to look at, and we can certainly summarize that. We should be able to summarize at some level the results of the registrar survey.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
And we may actually have come to some substantive agreement on some of the issues along the way. That being said, if we have not come to closure on most everything, then I think we're going to be looking for more public feedback and input. Understanding that what I just said has no real substance to it, other than it's an outline. I think that's what our target is at the moment. Mike?
Yes, Mike Blage. Marika, is it possible? Do you know what other things we might be competing against on Monday afternoon? You know, if there's going to be a session on new GTLDs, that will probably suck up most of the air and potential participants. So,
and many of
I was
us.
Just wondering. Yeah, there's only many of the people participating that will be in person. Obviously, have other responsibilities. So, do you know what we may be competing against at this time in the current draft schedule?
For the moment, the only thing that's there is the IDN CCTLD Fast Track Workshop and the CCMSO Tech Day. So we're conscious indeed not to schedule against new GTLDs because I think that was an obvious conflict. But we thought that might work. I mean, it's almost impossible to find any slot that doesn't have any conflict.
Oh,
so.
Marika, I totally appreciate that challenge. And as I said, I think that is a good enough distinction that, that will minimize overlap. So thanks for staff for taking that into consideration in the planning. Much appreciated.
I was working on the assumption that staff were well aware that at the very least between registrars and at large, there should not be any strong conflicts with it. So I hope that rules out new GTLDs.
Yes, unless they're going to change that session by themselves, then, we don't have a conflict. But, we made sure as well to try not to have it with any major meetings that we know many members of the working group have an interest in. So, unless there are any big changes in the schedule, there shouldn't be a major conflict.
Thank you, Marika. Cheryl?
Yes, it's really just information for Marika and a heads up for the rest of us. In the ACSO chairs list, I've been advised, and I'm happy to share with you, that the GAC, depending on the outcome of their meeting, which will be on the 1st of October, may or may not be looking to scheduling a meeting looking at malicious abuse in new GTLDs of the DNS, specifically from a law enforcement perspective, and it would be really good if staff could encourage that not to clash with this.
Indeed.
Okay, I'm just not sure how much control I have over the
Well,
GAC,
put it this way. As chair of the ANAC, I will be doing my damnedest to encourage it into a different space.
As interim chair of this meeting, I'm not sure which I'd go to if that clash happens. So take that as your advisement.
if that clash occurs or if they would decide to schedule at exactly the same time, we obviously would need to look for a different time. So, again, I mean, you know, just pencil it in.
Yeah, we need a heads up on that, because if that happens, heaven only knows what that's going to do to us all.
Thank you, Cheryl. Mike and Cheryl still have their hands up.
No, I'm busy.
Okay.
I'm just delay time, the lag.
I'm clearing it.
Okay. So at this point, Marika, if we come up with some words that go along with what I said before, that is essentially a report on the various things that we have done and some sort of solicitation of new input, exactly what it is will depend on how far we've gotten in the next 3 to 4 weeks. Does that give you enough to put together a small agenda item that sounds good?
I'll do my best.
I'm sure you will. I was just asking, do you need any more specificity than that?
No, of course, at some point it would be nice if we have a specific agenda, if we're going to have some people presenting or providing an overview, to put some names to it.
Okay. But this
or if we have specific questions that we want to ask the community about, to already put it there so those that are interested or have information can attend. I'm sure we can update that closer to the meeting.
Okay. I'm comfortable with where we sit, although we clearly have a bunch of work to do. The next item on the agenda is the public comment summary and analysis, and I will ask Marika or Margie or whoever has been looking at that to try to give us a brief overview. I looked at it very quickly today, and it was far longer than I expected it to be in terms of being a summary. And I'm eager to hear what the summary of the summary is.
I did my best to try to, keep as much information in there as possible, also to do justice, or try to do justice to those that have taken the effort of providing public comments, and assuming that not everyone might have the time to review all those comments in detail.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just quickly run through, because I think we probably need to discuss as well a more structured way of how to address these comments and maybe take them in, in with the relevant questions that this group is looking at. I think it's part of what we've been doing in some other working groups is, and I think it's something as well that has been done in the new GTLDs, is basically categorizing the different comments and, try to demonstrate as well how the working group has considered those and how they will be taken into account in, the final product, to make sure as well that people that participate and make the effort of contributing see how their comments impact the process.
Okay.
So I'll just take you through. I pulled up the summary on the right-hand screen. So the first is just, the standard language, the background, what the questions we're asking. We received 14 comments from 13 different participants. One person submitted two comments, because I think he forgot something in his initial submission. So many of them provided answers specifically relating to the different charter questions. So I've grouped all those together under the different headings. And then there were many as well that provided more general comments or raised other issues that weren't that easy to categorize under the specific questions. So what I could propose is that maybe for the next meeting or the meeting after is try to develop some kind of maybe an Excel sheet that might help the group to take in those comments and review those in a more structured manner.
Okay.
After everyone has had a chance as well to review the summary that I've prepared. It might be worth noting as well that one of the comments submitted was the constituency statement of the IPC. So that has been summarized here, but that will come back under agenda point 5 as well.
Okay.
So I don't know how much more in depth you would like me to go, or if people already had a chance to review it and have questions or would like to discuss it now. I don't know.
I have one or two questions, but anything else from the rest of the group first? Not a thing.
No, just a quick one. I mean, it's just interesting that some of the things that people have raised in the comments are very similar to things that we've discussed ourselves. I mean, there's, I didn't notice, I haven't had, I'll be honest, I haven't had a chance to read the entire thing through because I kind of get distracted by trying to run a business. But from what I can see, a lot of the stuff that has come up in the comments is stuff that we'd already discussed. So I didn't notice any massive curveballs, but I'm sure somebody might have done.
Okay.
I'd also echo what Cheryl was saying in the Adobe Connect as well about the, like, what was it, Cheryl said, like a Dropbox or something?
We might have a more anonymous sort of a Dropbox opportunity during the work shop where people can give us some of the tangible examples as opposed to the hearsay and conjecture that we all keep complaining about.
Jeff?
I agree. I think the Dropbox is, I like the idea of it. I'm just trying to think in practice, how that would work because, I'd love to hear like the specific examples in the pieces of, I won't say evidence, but what went on. But I'm not sure of, like, who would manage that and would it become just a soundboard against people complaining. I like the idea. I'm just trying to think if it could actually work in practice. I'll just throw that out there. If somebody has a great idea of how that anonymous Dropbox could work, I'd love to see it put into effect.
Yeah, before going on with the speaker list, my comment on that is I'm very leery of it because certainly any time I've received questions or comments about registration issues, I don't think there's ever been a case where I didn't have to go back and ask 7 questions to really understand the issue better before I even looked at what it was going on. So typically the first description from someone is not particularly useful, and if you can't go back because it's anonymous, I'm not very sure of the merit. I'm willing to try it, but I'm not very optimistic. Tatiana?
Yeah, I think that all comments from the community are very the same as we discussed later, but I found very interesting for me some comments from VPO about UDFP procedure and expired domain names and what they do with such domains and some examples.
Okay. Michele?
I think somebody else is ahead of me there.
No, I think James had his hand up, but it's down now.
Oh, okay. I appreciate what you're saying about, getting extra information to be able to, fully understand what people are saying. I think, but the flip side to that is that at the moment there's all these wonderful rumors and conjecture and, supposedly people are having problems. If we can get any information, even if it isn't as concrete as we'd like, at least that's better than not, than this kind of she said that he said that there's a problem kind of situation that we have at the moment. So even if it's just simply a case of, I don't know, maybe framing it in simple terms, what was the problem in your own words? Did you manage to resolve it? I don't know. I mean, I'm just, at the moment, I think we're just flying around a lot of places, trying to solve a problem that we're not even too sure what the parameters of the problem are.
I think part of our problem is to try to encourage people who we know have anecdotal evidence or stories to actually contribute them in a way that's meaningful to us. I certainly know at least a few people who have said yes. I've dealt with a dozen people who have come to me over the years, but none of these people, including myself, have taken the time of trying to document them and summarize them in a way that would be useful. So I think that's part of our challenge, that we really have to start buttonholing people. Anything else on the public comments, given that we haven't had a much of a chance to look at them ourselves? Jeff?
Yes. I'm trying to remember to lower my hand as I start talking, that there was a few points in the public comments about some of the registry practices and about the, you know, the expiration dates. A few people had mentioned that, and I'm not sure if anybody, now that I'm thinking about it, I know we had, I think it was Michael last week representing the registries. Is there, I don't know if we'd want to, you know, discuss that or maybe send some information, ask them why it's done, do all the registries do that, is, you know, because it seemed to me from the public comments that that was a source of confusion. I don't know if we wanted to think about that or go out, you know, or look into that, or if we even have some registry reps who wanted to address that issue.
Well, I'm not sure it's a confusing one. The at least part of the issue is that with auto-renew, as soon as the auto-renew happens, it looks like it is being renewed. And someone doing a query of who is will be under the impression that it hasn't expired anymore. So, you know, some benevolent person put the money in and renewed it for them, or the credit card they left with it did it all automatically, or things like that. So, if from my recollection of the comments I did read, that was essentially the issue. Maybe someone else has, you know, who's gone through it with more detail, has a different perception. Marika,
this is Mike.
Marika, go ahead. Marika.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to note indeed that several people noted the confusion of the who is status as well as the expiration date, and some made some suggestions there whether there could be a different status or that it would have expired or renewed or, you know, relevant to the actual status, and also a more clear indication of the actual date of expiration or whether it has been renewed by the registry, so they still need to do something. I think the IPC made a suggestion to follow a similar format that's being used, I think, in the UDRP when a certain status is added there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they were wondering if something similar could be done in addition to maybe providing a link where the registrants can find information on how to renew their domain name.
I mean, clearly right now we have a situation where the expiration date is the expiration date from the point of view of the registry and the registrar, but not the registrant. And maybe this group needs to invent yet another way of differentiating them. That sounds like a rather large change to make, and I would be reluctant in doing it, but that may be the only way of addressing the problem. Michele?
I mean, the confusion thing about the dates, I mean, from our experience, it's the area that causes the most headaches across all GTLDs and CCTLDs. I mean, we deal with the .ie CCTLD on a regular, we do a lot of business with them. And the way that they handle expiry is completely crack-addled. But it goes back to the thing that registrants aren't completely stupid. They can look up the who is on who.is or on a registrar's website or maybe on a registry's website, depending on the TLD. So a lot of the time they're going to see that that what they see is marked in who is the expiry date is showing a year later, and yet the domain has expired as far as everybody else is concerned, and that is a problem. Now, I'm not completely okay with the inner workings of some of these things, but with the thick registries, it's the registry operator who controls the who is output, not the registrar, as far as I understand things. So, I mean,
Not that part of it. I assume even in a thin registry, the expiration date that the registry believes is correct is still controlled by the registry.
This is Mike Blage. I'll go double check that, but the last time I checked, yeah, even a thin registry such as VeriSign still kicks out the creation date and expiration date, and then the primary, secondary DNS, as well as the registrar of record. and I think the last updated. So I think if Thin Registry does kick out that data, I'll go verify that right now.
Okay, Ron?
Yeah, I was surprised at the comment that getting the who is to be consistent with the rules is perhaps outside the scope. I was assuming that we would be able to make a recommendation. I mean, I find it's intolerable to have a period described in the rules that you read when you agree to register a domain name, yet that exact term does not ever appear in the whois record. And I think this is the gist of 99% of the confusion.
Which term do you say does not exist? Sorry, I for clarity.
Which period post, what is it, the grace periods and these post-recovery, I forget the exact terms, but when it moves from one category to the other, if that isn't reflected in the who is, then you may be in a period, but you have no notice that you're in any kind of period, and there's no way to find out.
That's correct. Yeah.
And that seems to be the intolerable thing of the current situation, even amplified when you go to resellers. So it all hinges back to that. The fact that we have terms in the policy that we agree as registrants, we agree that this is the policy and these periods exist, yet we have no way to determine what period we're in. In fact, as people pointed out, it appears that we've already renewed. And as someone who helps people do several domains, I've even had a confusion on my part where I don't tend to renew stuff until close to the expiry time, and with several expiring, I may have renewed them last week, and then all of a sudden they flip over and say, oh, yeah, it's renewed, while your memory says, oh, yes, I took care of that, and in fact, you hadn't. So this is a great, I think it's within the scope of, or I hope it's within the scope of what we're working on.
So you're suggesting that the state of the domain name from the registrant's point of view should be visible in who is.
Agreed. Yes, that's very concise. Thank you.
Just mark that down before I forget it. Okay. Michele, your hand's still up or again?
It's up again.
Okay. Go.
I know some, just with relation to this entire confusion with who is, I know that at least one registrar changes the name servers over to name servers that clearly indicate the domain status. Now, I don't know if other registrars are doing it, but I know that Network Solutions use pending renewal deletion, I think .com. I'm sure Paul would be able to say what it is. But I mean, that's pretty clear. If you see a domain that's through Network Solutions and the name servers are set to pending renewal deletion, then you know that the domain is in that kind of status. I'll leave Paul.
Paul?
Yeah, if I can, Alan, it's Paul. Just to follow on, that is true, we do that, but that's not necessarily at the actual moment of expiration. That change occurs a couple days after, so we still, customers can have that same confusing status on, say, the expiration date out to a couple days post-expiration before it's changed over and made with the good messaging.
Sorry, it's Michele again. Paul, just to clarify, what happens when the domain expires before the name servers change over to the pending renewal deletion ones? Is it still resolving to the original place, or is it going nowhere, or what's happening?
Resolves to the original place.
So as far as the user is concerned, it still works?
In fact, it does.
If anyone had a chance to look at the note I sent out late last night on some extracts from a particular registration agreement, you will see, and I don't claim that is typical, but it's one that I had ready access to. They essentially say they may change the pointer to point somewhere else. It may go into a black hole. It may continue to point to where it was before, and it's solely at their discretion, and they make no commitments about what actually happens during that process. And I think that certainly is a situation that happens a lot of the time, that there is no predictability. Now, for the largest and most eminent registrars, I'm sure that their processes are far more transparent, but that's not the case in general. I think we've started to drift back into the general discussion and not the particular comments anymore. Is there anything else people want to address in these comments, given that we haven't had a chance to really process them fully? But are there any other issues we want to bring to bear before we go on to the next agenda item?
This is Marika. Maybe just to point out that there are some comments, including the one, for example, by WIPO, and where they raised some new issues that, you know, haven't really come up, and the group might want to consider whether they should be added, and maybe it's a question that should be asked to the council, whether they feel that it does fit somewhere under the categories, or whether that maybe should be passed on to future work in this area. But I think it's worth looking out for some elements that, you know, haven't come up yet and don't specifically fit under these five issues, but might be relevant in relation to the post-exploration discussion.
Okay, that's something to keep an eye out for. I don't know to what extent this is reflected in the summary, but when looking at the original raw comments, I noticed at least a couple of places there were people who were making statements that I won't say are wrong, but had some of the factual things in error, or were talking about issues that were not really related to post-expiry issues at all. And I think somehow along the way, we also need to flag those as ones we are not factoring in and note the reason why.
Yeah, I think most of those were really, didn't have the facts right. I didn't include them in this summary because I tried to include the ones that, you know, were relevant for the discussion. So if you still find some here, indeed, when we go into the details and categorizing them and going through them, we still point it out. But I did try to do my best to take, not put in those that, had the facts wrong or were completely unrelated to the issues we're looking at.
Yeah, I guess I'm suggesting that we need to identify those and not perhaps summarize them, but identify them as ones that were not acted on because of those errors in fact or misdirection.
And I just would like to encourage everyone to read the comments fully as well and not only rely on the summary so that everyone has all the information, of course, that was submitted.
Yeah. Ron, your hand's up.
Yeah, this is perhaps slightly tangential, but relates back to you saying, many times when you hear something or the Dropbox idea, you need to communicate back with the person, and public comments are falling into that exact trap, that if the person wasn't actually factual and had things out, they may have other information that is germane to what we're doing, yet we don't follow up with that person. And I think that's true with ICANN in general. So it's a defect of the mechanism. But we can we in our own working group follow up with those public comments without violating the things that public comments close on a certain day?
Marika?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to note that although the email addresses are not public, we do have a way to retrieve them. So in past working groups, we have had occasions where there were certain comments that were very interesting, but the group wanted some more details on, how certain solutions might work in practice. So we have been able to go back to certain people to ask, like, can you maybe explain or provide us with some more information? So that option does exist. Of course, you know, the person that has provided the comment is free not to answer or not to provide any further input, but there is an option for the working group to ask for the details if they would like.
Yeah, just as we're going to ask for input in Seoul and at other opportunities along the way, I don't think there's anything to preclude us from seeking targeted more information.
Mm-hmm.
If I could just add one point, because I did receive an email from someone that was saying, I still want to submit a comment, but I didn't have time. Can I still do it? So, well, the public comment forum has already been archived in, summary final stage, but if you forward me your comments, I'm happy to share them with the working group. So at least my view is that even though the public comment period is closed, if someone comes forward with really relevant information and would like the working group to take that into account, I personally don't think we should say, oh, no, now we're not going to share that anymore. You have to wait until the next opportunity arises.
This is on Wickersham again.
That.
Can we post that on at the bottom of the public comments? Is that allowed to be posted there?
I don't know if there's a vehicle to do that, regardless of whether it's allowed. We can.
I think there is a in the public comment forum. There is an option to ask for further information. So I wouldn't maybe, because then we run the risk that people start posting as well, because that's sometimes a risk with the public comment forums that people start just posting complaints about, any issue they have on their mind because they just see an email address and they see a chance to, have their say. So in the public comment forum, there is a link where they can ask for further information. Also, I've seen that several people have posted on the wiki. There's an option to comment on the wiki, and some questions actually have emerged there as well. So that's another way where people can submit information. We have been talking as well internally, maybe a way as well on the wiki to provide an email address where people can send an email and ask for further questions, to a staff-directed email address, where we then can see whether it's relevant or not and forward that to the group. So I think there are a number of ways people can submit information, so hopefully that should be sufficient.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody else on the public comments? Okay. The next item on the agenda is an update on constituency statements. I think, Marika, you're in the hot seat again.
Yep. I just want to update everyone. The deadline for submission of constituency statements was last Friday. So far, we've only received two constituency statements, one from the registrar constituency and one from the IBC constituency who submitted it as part of the public comment forum. So my first question would be, any of those of you that are part of GNSO constituencies, can you give us an idea whether your constituency is still working on this, whether we can still expecting some information? If not, I would raise a question, and I think it's maybe a question that Tim as a liaison might want to bring to the council, that it is worrisome that in a policy development process where we do rely to a great extent on input from constituencies, we've only received two constituency statements. And I think the question would need to be asked, is this, do people need more time or more information, or what is the reason for the very limited number that we've received this time around?
I would hazard a guess that it's being overwhelmed by too many other things with deadlines, but that's only my guess. I will say on the point of view of at large, we did not, although we're not a GNSO constituency, we are invited to submit documents, and we explicitly didn't because we felt the request for the issues report was essentially our constituency statement to start off with. We believe there is a problem, and it needs to be addressed. Mike?
This is Mikey. I think we've had a little process breakdown in the business constituency. So if we could get a dog ate the homework extension, I think we'd probably come up with a constituency statement.
I'm sure one of us has a dog that will fit that category.
Yeah, I don't have a dog, but surely on this working group there's one that could fill the bill.
Yeah, Mikey, it's Michael Young. From the RYC, I don't think you have to worry too much because we're in the same boat. so we have to beg the same forgiveness.
Okay. So maybe, Marika, at least a couple of us could get a dog ate the homework extension for a week or two, and we could come.
I have a dog that will bury the homework.
Yeah, this is Ron Wickersham. The NCUC informed me 2 days after. It was like this is my first working with a group, and I didn't realize that they thought that I would do a draft of what what they would send in. And 2 days before it was due, they said, could I do that? And I had volunteered to do another thing with them that was took up all the time. So if we can get an extension.
I think the homework-eating dogs are running rampant.
Yeah.
They've eaten homework all across the globe.
So how much more time do people need? Because I think it probably is helpful to put a deadline on it and give the dog a rest.
Hey, Pelage, do you think we could do it in 2 weeks?
I think 2 weeks would be plenty of time. 10 days, 2 weeks would be okay.
Okay, so we'll put it back on the agenda again then in 2 weeks, and then hopefully we can just take it off because everyone has submitted their constituency statements.
Okay, thanks a lot.
I think one of us should send something to the council list reminding them that these haven't arrived and giving the new deadline.
I'll send a note to Tim because I think he's due to provide an update to the council anyway on the status of the group and the progress made. So I'll drop him a line to see if he can add that.
I think there's a GNSO meeting on Thursday.
Yes.
Which means his report was due last week, but yes.
I haven't seen it in yet.
Where are we? I was trying to decipher the comment that Cheryl just made on the list on the Adobe chat room. I think she was talking about her dogs, though.
Maybe.
Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, another question for the working group would, of course, be how to go about reviewing the different constituency statements and, or maybe it's an appropriate question, more an appropriate question when we have all the statements. But it's something to think about in the meantime.
Yeah, I think it's a similar task that we have with regard to the public comments. I'm not going to try to decipher Michaeli's comment either. I think some of us are breaking down here.
I think mofo is a term of art we should work into this report somehow.
Be nice to my cat.
Oh, thank you all so much for making me smile. Oh, dear.
Cheryl, just as a point of information, the first meeting that we started this morning, or my morning, started at midnight your time, and that was about 6 hours ago. I gather you're giving up sleeping tonight.
Correct.
Okay. Now we understand why she's giddy.
She's asleep.
Not if I can
on
work
the next agenda
today.
Item.
Okay. Okay. So constituency statements. We have added a 2 week extension, roughly from today, and we will now note that at the next GNSO meeting, or it will be reported. And then, Marika says, if time permits, and we still do have time if anyone has the stamina, to go back to charter questions and start talking about the substantive issues again. And the first charter question is whether adequate opportunity exists for registrants to redeem their expired domain names. Now, Marika, as the one who phrased these questions, can you define opportunity as opposed to notice and such? How do you recognize adequate opportunity?
I think that's part of the definition this group probably needs to work out what is adequate opportunity. As I understand, most registrars do offer opportunities to renew domain names in auto-renewal grace periods or an RGP. If it's not a consensus policy or it's not an obligation, so is that adequate opportunity or not? I think those are some of the questions the group will need to consider in this context.
Well, let's consider the example that I sent out last night of a registrar or a reseller who basically says that they have the right at any time after expiration to assign it to someone else. So depending on their, essentially their whim, although presumably they have some rationale behind it but not announced in their registration agreement, there may or may not be an opportunity after expiration to do anything with it. Does this group consider that adequate? James.
Yeah, Alan, I'd just like to put on the table more questions, really. I don't have answers to those, but it's the question of whether or not offering an auto-renew toggle through the control panel is a or with that service is an adequate opportunity to renew, because the case could be made that that's giving registrants a year opportunity to renew. So that's just one thought, is whether or not that control in and of itself is an adequate opportunity.
Well, let me ask a question of the group, because we're starting to come down to discussion of options that a registrar may offer, and we've talked about examples of what GoDaddy does. To what extent do we deem that if some registrars offer ample opportunity, then the answer to question number one is yes? Do we feel that we must, does this group feel that to be able to answer yes with assurance, that is, any registrant has ample opportunity, that all registrants must do it, or if they're careful enough, they can pick a registrar who gives them ample opportunity, and therefore that's sufficient?
Got a whole bunch of hands up.
We have many answers, many questions, or many hands up. In any case, Michele.
Just going back to what James was saying before. Sorry, but
yeah,
I had my hand up.
That's fine. Sorry.
Just with regard to the auto renew option within a control panel, which is still pertinent to what you're asking about. The only problem with that is that if the auto renew option is enabled, but the credit card data isn't up to date, then it will fail miserably. And following on from that, one of the problems that we've seen is that registrants will quite happily admit to receiving the emails from us, but will ignore them, even though the email will tell them clearly that, you know, that their credit card has expired, or that their contact, any number of different things are happening with the domain. So while the auto-renew option might be a good thing, you have to add in something there about, as long as the registrant's, payment options are kept up to date or something. Mm-hmm. Sorry, if you just rely on the auto-renew thing by itself, there's no payments, it's not going to work.
Okay. Alan, if this is James, if I could just respond really quickly to Michele. And I agree with you, Michele. It's not a guarantee that the auto-renew will be successful, but does it not offer an opportunity to for the registrant to express intent on as to whether or not they intend to renew, even though it may not ultimately be a successful transaction?
I'll answer the question. I'll answer the question in a negative sort of way. If a registrant indicates they want to auto-renew but the credit card happens to bounce, an honorable registrar shouldn't immediately say clearly they don't want the domain, let's sell it to someone else. They have indicated an intention of paying albeit without the right credit card information. So I think that puts the registrar in a weaker position of saying I'm going to dispose of it through some other way. In terms of a moral decision.
Absolutely, Alan. I'm actually putting the question out there that the auto-renew control in and of itself is a means to capture the intentions or the desires of the registrant for the domain to renew.
Right. And Cheryl just added the note that it can be all sorts of reasons why credit cards don't work. Let's stick to the speaker list for the moment. Sorry, who was that last speaking? I've lost track now. Was that Ron?
Well, I was just going to comment that it doesn't seem to me that because I choose not to auto-renew means that I have any less intention of renewing. I just don't choose to allow them to decide when my credit card is run. So, and with the registrar...
Yeah, I don't think the statement is reversible.
Yeah, okay, good.
Not in my mind anyway.
Agreed. Yeah. And then to your earlier question, broader question, is there opportunity? I would be greatly saddened if we said that because 95% of registrants are with a registrar or who does give adequate ones, that we don't have to worry about the individuals who unfortunately are with the ones like your example posted. I would hope that we can state that ICANN's policy should be that all registrants are given adequate opportunity to renew and not have junky policies that let them change it without notice.
I will announce who I am. I'm Alan, and I believe that is why we started this whole process.
Good.
McKaylee?
Alan, just going back to your thing there about if the auto-renew fails. I mean, the only thing I'd add to that is that I can't speak for every single registrar. I have no idea what every single registrar on the face of the planet does, but I can only speak about those I've rather had direct relationships with as a registrant or the one that I own. If a payment fails, our system will automatically inform the registrant that the payment has failed. So the responsibility and the onus is on the registrant to rectify that situation. Now, if we were to do something like have one failed payment from a registrant and then do something odd to their domain, then yes. Okay, that's obviously morally wrong. That's all.
Yeah, I'll give an example that doesn't relate to domain names, but just happened to me last week, in that I maintain an ISP account for dial-in usage when I'm traveling and have no other recourse, and I found out the other day it had been suspended because they had a credit card where there had been fraud and the credit card number changed, and although I remembered to change all of the ongoing charges, I didn't remember that one.
They
sent an email notification to the primary email address, which long ago was so flooded with spam and viruses that I send it into the bit bucket. They had five other email addresses on file, which they didn't use. And, you know, the question is, was that acting the best they could have? In my mind, no, it wasn't. But they followed their procedures.
Yes. In my mind, yes, you see.
I'm sorry?
Disagree with you. I would disagree with you.
Okay.
I mean, the reason I disagree with you is that while in theory, yes, a company may have multiple email addresses and other things on record, a lot of us unfortunately have billing systems that are only capable of sending the automated emails to the email that's the primary email on the account. Now, while it would be fantastic if software worked in other ways, it's very hard. And the flip side to it as well is that I can only speak for our own experience with this, is that we've had multiple occasions where people have complained to us because we've sent them reminders about payments and about expiries and everything else. So the problem we find is that people will almost report us for spamming them if,
yep,
we send them more emails than the absolute minimum.
I think, Michele, I don't think you can win in this situation.
Oh, no, no.
You got that right.
Agree on that. As long as we can agree on that.
Further discussion on the issue of adequate opportunity. I mean, I'll put my stake in the ground, and you can tear it out and stab it into me or whatever. I believe adequate opportunity says there has to be a reasonable length of time, and it has to be guaranteed, and there has to be reasonable expectation that the registrant has noticed it expires. The example that I sent last night where the contract explicitly says it is up to the registrant to keep all records, and if you don't keep records of when it expires, don't expect us to let you know in any way, I think is short of the mark. Mason.
Sorry, hold on. Sorry, my mute button isn't working. Can you hear me?
Yep.
So is there a role that's defined for the registrant in this entire process? That is, is the registrant obligated to familiarize himself with terms and conditions and either choose to do business with that registrar or reseller if he finds them not to his liking, or go elsewhere?
This is Paulie. Can I try to respond to that?
Sure.
Get
I could, but I'd like other people to speak too. Yes, Mike, go ahead.
I think, Mason, obviously, you know, competition and choice is good in the marketplace. But what we're talking about here is, I think, ensuring a certain minimum safeguard, a bottom, a safety net. That's what we're looking for with regard to openness, transparency, and predictability. And to sit there and say we're going to let somebody, you know, choose a registrar because they provide no safety net, I don't think that's necessarily the responsible thing to do when you look at the broader domain name market, particularly in light of a market that may have several hundred, if not thousands, of new GTLDs. So certain common rules of the road, I think, are, in the industry's best interest.
Mason, are you up again?
Yeah, I am,
okay.
I may. So, Mike, I understand where you're coming from. If the purpose of the working group is to address an issue it believes exists already in the marketplace, and not necessarily, if you'll pardon the expression, borrowing trouble from future TLDs. If there is a problem, and I know everybody here is on record that I seriously doubt there's a significant enough problem for this amount of energy, then it needs to be identified and dealt with. I'm not trying to stick my finger in anybody's eye about playing fast and loose with your terms and conditions. I do think that registrars and resellers have an obligation to clearly and conspicuously notify their registrants what to expect with regard to the registration period of a domain name. I don't know that even if we do lay down new law in this area somehow, that it will prevent what the group perceives may be happening. Whether it is happening or not, I don't know that by mandating certain terms and conditions in registrar agreements, registrant agreements, or certain practices with the treatment of a post-expiry name are going to have the outcome that you believe it might. And that's my concern, that this will be sort of a butterfly and wheel situation where there's a lot of activity with no real measurable outcome.
Okay, I've got a comment. Let's go on with the speaker list first. James?
Hi, Alan. This is James. I have some points of agreement and some points with Mason and some points where I think, for example, I'm willing to concede that there might be a problem. I don't know the extent of it, but I'm willing to concede that it might scale with the introduction of new GTLD, so I'm just trying to keep that in mind. But, you know, I think we're going down a path here where I do have some questions. I think it goes back to your earlier question, Alan, is how do we say yes to a problem, to one of these charter questions, or how do we say no to one of these charter questions? So if one registrant at one particular time has a problem, does that, is that an indictment of all registrar practices? To Mike's point about consumer choice, I agree there should be safety nets, but at a certain point, if a registrar differentiates itself in the marketplace because it's an innovated, some different safety features and protections, at what point do they become, do they cease to be differentiators and become, you know, requirements? I think that's something that, you know, I think that the folks that you have participating in ICANN in general and in this group in particular are probably concerned about as the folks who put a lot of thought into how they can make the registrant experience safer, more reliable, more predictable. And then it just kind of gets into, I think, a little bit of a larger question of about what role the registrant has, what responsibilities the registrant has to ensure that their names are intact. And I think that the concern here is that we're measuring it based on outputs at the end of a sequence when, in fact, registrant involvement earlier in the sequence at various steps could have resulted in a different output. Therefore, we're indicting the entire sequence when, in fact, you know, there's a temporal aspect to the choices that are made, not only by the registrant, but or reflective in the context of the registrar practice, but also throughout time. And I think it's just, it becomes a tricky situation where we want to turn back the clock and give a registrant additional responsibilities or additional choices or additional options at previous points in time. So I just wanted to get those thoughts out onto the table and kind of segue those back to what Mason and Mike Lodge were saying.
Okay. Mikey?
This is Mikey. I agree with a lot of what James says because I always do. And it reminds me that, you know, we've got some other working groups that we're working together on where we're looking at the issue of what a floor look like and registration abuse working group. We're taking Barry Cobbs on this call. Barry's been leading a subgroup there looking at consistency of agreements across registrars.
Hmm.
Also sort of chipping away at this same issue, which is, you know, yes, there's a debate to be had about whether there should be a floor at all, and then there's another debate as to how high that bar ought to be, especially given James's point that you don't want to have the bar set in such a way that it prevents innovative and aggressive registrars from doing more than the minimum. So I think that this is a tasty discussion, especially with James's last point, where if we take a look at any part of the system in isolation, we may be making a mistake. But we may want to take a look at the whole process and figure out a way to solve this problem before it gets way down to the 11th hour, like James was talking. So, just chiming in. Thanks.
Thank you, Mikey. I had a couple of thoughts, and they're not necessarily related to each other. The first is, before I sent out that note yesterday, my first attempt was to find a random selection of a few registrars or resellers to look at what their agreement said. So I did a couple of innocent Google searches, turned up a few pages of people who will sell you a domain name, and on the first five I looked at, there was no registration agreement apparent on their website. Maybe one would have shown up after they took my money, I'm not sure. You know, they may have pointed it to me or sent me to it, but certainly there was nothing that I could find prior to putting my money down in terms of identifying what the rules were. So we're dealing in an environment where, in at least some cases, the consumer cannot make an informed judgment, assuming they know what they need to do, it's very, very difficult. Now, you could say we should reject those registrars and not do business with them or those resellers, but that's the environment that people are finding right now, and novices are going and trying to find some place to do business. And right now, the environment is far from transparent and clear. The other thing is we're not necessarily, someone mentioned turning the clock back, and in terms of turning the clock back to where the situation on expiration was 7-8 years ago, where there was a period of time after EDDP was put in place, where it was believed there was a period of time from 0 to 45 days where the you could renew a name with the registrar, and then a 30-day redemption grace period added on to that at the end. And so we're looking at a period which ranged from 30 to 45 to 75 days. And the question is, what does this group believe it should be today? Should it be zero? Should it be something higher than that? And where do we want to set it? And that's what I look at is when we're talking about the opportunity to redeem a name after expiration. It's what kind of time frame do we feel we need to set as the minimum, which we may decide is zero, in light of the last time policy like this was set in ICANN, the expectation was the time delay was somewhere between 30 and 75 days. Michele.
Alan, this is James. With a clarification.
Yeah.
Yeah, just when I was mentioning turning the clock back, it wasn't necessarily through the history or the evolution of this process or this policy, because I really haven't been around.
No, I understood that. I'm just saying the expression brought this thought to mind.
Okay, and I was just for the record, I was speaking in the terms of an individual registrant's experience of getting to the end of a process and then wanting to go back through it with different choices.
I certainly didn't misunderstand. It just triggered the thought.
Wanted to make sure I was clear. Thank you.
Yeah. Michele is the one last man standing right now.
Woohoo! I would agree with a lot of what James and Mikey said. The other thing I'd add as well is that the vast majority of people out there treat domain names like commodities, and in a lot of respects, they don't really value them until they lose them. Earlier today, my business partner were perusing several registrars' websites, just comparing pricing on various TLDs, and I think you can get a .info domain for as low as about €1 if you go out there looking hard enough. So the thing is, how much value does the person place on the domain name at the time of purchase? I'm not expecting an answer to that, but the thing is that in some respects, we're kind of overthinking some things, and at the same time, people do have the choice. If they don't, maybe registration agreements aren't clearly visible. I mean, what concerns me a lot more is when I see websites selling products and services and not just domain names. And there are absolutely no tangible contact details anywhere. I mean, you can't find a physical address for a lot of websites. I think there was an EU Commission report came out about 2 weeks ago showing that of the e-commerce websites that they checked within the European Union, and I can't remember what the sample was, that they'd found something like 40 or 50% of the sites didn't have any tangible contact details. Nothing. Mm-hmm. And yet people still buy from them. Now, the thing is this, we're all adults. Now, while we within the registrar community, I can speak, and I'm sure that none of my colleagues in the registrar community are going to disagree with me, we've no interest in screwing over our clients, because ultimately, if we screw over our clients, we go out of business. But at the same time, we can't sit there holding their hands all the time. We can make changes to our policies, make them clearer, push people in the right direction, help them to do whatever they need to do. But we can't be expected to, you know, wipe their rear ends for them at the same time. I just, there's some things that people have been talking about, you know, with regards to security and various other things. And as Jane said, I mean, some people will, some companies will offer greater levels of security, and, you know, that they will charge for that. Sorry, it's just my random rant. Excuse me.
Random rants are good. Ron?
Yes. Yeah, I'll even go back, if you want to take history. I mean, I have domain names that before there was a charge, there was no expectation that a domain name would ever expire. And I receive a notice that, you know, you talk about changing the rules at the whim. I receive a notice that if I continue to use the domain name, then I'm agreeing that I can be charged an annual fee. And my only option is to turn the domain name if I disagree with the change in policy. So these kind of things go way, way back in the Internet. But the part that, but as a what I consider to be not affiliated with registries or registrars or anything like that, but as a pretty knowledgeable person on Internet stuff, when a friend asks me to evaluate the status of their domain name, has it expired or is it close to expiring, can they move it to another registrar, and I can't find that information as a knowledgeable one, how do we expect the current situation be adequate for someone who isn't, who doesn't have this experience? I think that, and I applaud most of the registries and registrars for doing a good job of notifying it, but my concern is that we can't just throw the rest of the things by saying this good example means that there's no responsibility from an ICANN policy point of view to have a concern for registrants who fall under prey of someone who doesn't respect their agreement or something to that effect. Sorry, we're ranting on.
I it's Alan. I have a couple of thoughts, and I agree that if one is fully rational and alert, there are a lot of things one doesn't do in life. And deal with someone who refuses to give you any contact information whatsoever is probably one of those. That why should you trust them with your credit card if they won't even tell you what country they live in? On the other hand, we know that many people approach the Internet with a level of trust that is completely ridiculous. And from my perspective, as the custodian of the domain name system, ICANN has a responsibility to at least attempt to make sure that people who are, the expression isn't quite legally valid, but I'll say selling the goods that they are responsible for, act reasonably. And I think that's why we are here having this discussion. I'd like to say that everyone is a grown-up and is responsible for their own actions, but we know that that's not always a safe way to treat things. We've run out of time, and we seem to have run out of hands. Was there anything else on the agenda? Confirmed date of the next meeting? The next meeting is next week at the same time. Is there anything else that needs discussion before we adjourn?
Everyone. Keep up the good work. Is the interim chair.
Yeah, way to go, Mr. Interim Chair.
It's
keep
one hell of an
job.
Interim, isn't it?
A little interim is good.
Having now ended 5.5 hours of conference calls, thank you for putting a smile on my face. Thank you all for participating.
Have a beer on us.
Bye.
Wonderful.
Thanks. Marika, are you